Hi, this is Bernie Wides, the naturalist, and we're broadcasting on the Heritage Radio Network from downtown Bushwick, Roberta's terrific restaurant. And today we're going to do part two of a series on astronomy that we've done. And, part one, I had a guest, Michael Hamburg, on, and we dealt with a lot of some of space. So does anybody know what that theme music was from? I'm not going to tell you what it was from, but it was from a famous movie that was done in the 80s, Michael, was it?
60s.
In the 60s,
right? You're dating
right.
us. You're dating us.
Yes. So we're going to continue our discussion about astronomy, and I'm going to reintroduce my guest today is Michael Hamburg, who is a colleague of mine at the Museum of Natural History and a friend, and he's going to be the expert guest today. So, Michael, I think we'll start off talking today about the Earth. We didn't deal much with the Earth in our first program, so we'll talk about the Earth. So first of all, even before we get to life on Earth, about how old is the Earth relative to the rest of our solar system?
Okay, the Earth and all the planets formed about the same time, and the process was finished about 4.6 billion years ago.
Okay, billion years
right,
ago.
Right, give or take a few hundred thousand years. Don't nail me to it.
Yeah, we won't quibble about
right.
100,000 years.
Okay. And what's amazing is that all of the planets and the sun and everything else that we call our solar system formed out of the same body of material, which was a huge, huge cloud of gas and dust.
Okay, so this huge cloud of gas and dust, we'll go into it just a little bit, Michael, because, you know, we only have a half hour. But where did all this stuff come from to make up the Earth?
That's great. Great question. One of the things that I always love to tell people at the museum is that we exist in this great recycling machine called the universe. And by that, I mean that everything that exists in the universe goes back into making the next generation of either stars or planets, just like people go on from generation to generation. Nothing is lost. So the gas and dust that made up our solar system actually came from the remnants of a prior generation star.
Okay, so everything is recycled. Nothing
Absolutely.
Is lost.
Nothing is lost.
Nothing is wasted. Even energy.
Although I lose my glasses all the time.
Yeah, well, that's... Right. Yeah, you need a finder on that, a chip.
Exactly, right.
That's what I always say. Put a chip in the glasses
yeah.
so you can find them. Okay, so so the Earth is about, what'd you say,
About 4.6 billion
years old.
Right.
And when did life start on the Earth? Do we know anything about that?
Yes, we
how
do.
How it started or when it started?
Well, we know yes to some of those questions, and we have some ideas about some of the others. Well, we know that life started approximately a billion years after the formation of the Earth. And we have to remember, Bernie, that the conditions on the Earth were very different than what we're used to today. As much as we complain about how rough things are today, it was 1,000 times more hostile on the Earth in the early days. There was no breathable oxygen in the atmosphere. There were rarely any plants, and landforms looked nothing like they did today. So it took a while for life to grab hold. We don't know exactly how, but we believe that it began in the water.
Well, yeah, I've done some looking into this also, like you have, and I think we would probably agree that life started in the water.
Yes.
Either in the shallow seas
right.
or the very deep oceans.
Yes. Now, yes. what's interesting so, about that is the
yeah.
shallow seas are heated by the sun, but the very deep ocean areas are not. So, and we know we need warmth to nurture life. So one of the great discoveries was how could life exist so deep and away from the heat and light of the sun? And we've, of course, discovered that the very heat that the Earth creates is given off in these tubes, these outlets deep beneath the ocean that nurture a lot of life. These
right.
black smokers, they call
yeah,
them.
Yeah, they're deep sea volcanoes
right.
or thermal vents. And that's a whole topic for another program because there's so much to that.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember in school learning about that everything, all life depends upon the sun. Now, is that still true when we talk about these thermal vent communities? That's a tough question.
Well, so far, if it exists, then we have to rethink our explanation. So we know that there is some teeming life down thousands and thousands of feet where the sun really doesn't shine. So I would start to go with the side that says, no, we don't need the sun, at least directly. Of course, the sun powers everything ultimately in the solar system, but we don't need a direct sunshine to do that.
Yeah, so... So the other theory is that life started in the shallow seas.
Yes.
And the first form of life was a very primitive life.
One-cell organisms.
Yes.
That actually took a long time to develop, because what we have is shallow warm water. We have chemicals that are the precursors of life. And then what happened? Now, nobody can actually answer that. We don't know the exact process. In fact, there was an interesting experiment done in the 1950s, and two scientists, Miller and Urey, who tried to recreate the very conditions that life began under. They took a big vessel and they filled it with water and they put the various chemicals in, and then they shot bolts of electricity to mimic lightning storms that are perhaps thought to be catalysts for life. And did they come up with life? No, which is probably a good thing. We're having a Frankenstein story there, but they did create some more complex proteins.
Yes, lifelike proteins.
Yes.
Chains of hydrocarbons.
Yes.
And things like that.
And that's our basis. We are built on these long polymer chains of carbon-based proteins and enzymes.
Okay, so the things that we need for life as we know it on Earth are water. Okay.
Carbon.
Hydrogen.
Oxygen and nitrogen. Those are the basic
elements.
Right, and elements.
Some form of energy.
And some form of
energy.
To drive
the system, like you
right.
said, like the sun.
Right. And what's interesting is those are very, very common elements. They're very simple. There's nothing really complex about them. If you look at the periodic table of elements, they're pretty much towards the beginning.
Right, at the beginning of the table.
Mm-hmm.
So they were really basic ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
And there are plenty of that material. There are plenty of those materials on Earth. And
not only that, Bernie, there are plenty of those materials in the entire universe.
Yes, that's the next thing, but let's stick to the Earth first.
Okay.
Because it's a basic topic first. We'll talk about life on Earth. So we know that life started sometimes a billion years after the Earth settled down, really, and cooled off enough, because it was very hot at it for a while, I remember.
And we needed water.
We needed liquid water.
We did. Now, the belief is that there are probably two sources of the water that covers three-fifths of the Earth. One is the outgassing of the cooling Earth produced a lot of hydrogen and oxygen from deep within, and it's not much to combine hydrogen and oxygen to make water. The other more dramatic, actually, origin would be the impact of hundreds of thousands of comets during the early cooling periods of the Earth, and the comet is nothing more than frozen water and dust. So when it hits the warm Earth, they melt and fill up all the shallow areas and create bodies of water.
Yeah, so we know the materials were there, but we don't know actually what started it off.
There is an interesting speculation that comes in and out of favor, and some people believe that life traveled from another origin and came to Earth, perhaps hitchhiking, deeply buried in a comet. And then when conditions were right on Earth, blossomed into life here. And the only thing, Bernie, that can actually make a trip like that is believed to be certain types of viruses.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine
the simplest form of life.
They can go dormant for long periods of time. They can be impervious to radiation, deeply buried in a comet. Could you imagine if we were really all the descendants of viruses?
Well, it's an interesting story, and it's a lot. It would make a good movie.
The virus
trilogies or something like that.
Actually, it has a name. This is a belief called a panspermia, or sometimes transpermia.
Right, I love that expression, transpermia.
Sounds like some kind of artificial insemination.
Yes, I picture those sperm flying through the universe and a little spaceship.
They might be,
and landing and looking for something to impregnate.
Right. Well, that may
be. And we've been doing it for forever. us little sperms looking for something to impregnate.
It could be.
So, and since this is a male-oriented show today, but even though we're going to talk about Mother Earth and Gaia, which is a theory of how the Earth is interactive and all that. But so let's say that life on Earth has been established, and we'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. And we're getting this great music now, which is good music for what we were just talking about. How did life start? And when we picture all those science fiction movies with those monsters and strange-looking critters, this is good, eerie music for it. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a break for a minute, and I'll remind you that if you have a question you'd like answered, or one we could try to answer, 718-497-2128. You can call in the studio or at info@heritageradio.com. That's our network. And our sponsor is TechServe. And I think TechServe would love this music. We're back on the air now to Radio Heritage Network. This is Bernie Wides, the naturalist, with my guest today, Michael Hamburg. And we started talking about the Earth and what started life on Earth. Where did it come from? Which we really don't know. Nobody knows. If you're religious, it's very easy. You just said that God did everything. But the scientific point of view says we really don't know yet. Someday we may know. So we deduced that the early life on Earth was very simple, probably bacteria or maybe viruses. And Michael, how did we evolve from that into these good-looking life?
Yes, really.
Like we have in the studio.
Movie stars today.
Movie right? stars and all that stuff.
Well, you know, first thing, we needed a lot of time and some luck. So we know that for a long time, perhaps a billion years, the most complex form of life was some kind of single-cell sludge in water and doesn't make a very interesting conversational partner. But then something really amazing happened. When the Earth was almost 2 billion years old, the atmosphere changed dramatically. Remember, before, there was no oxygen available at all in the atmosphere. It was you would not be able to breathe on the Earth.
Just nasty gases and stuff.
Yeah, a lot of methane, a lot of carbon dioxide, all of that nasty stuff. Then about 2 billion years ago, all of a sudden, little one-celled organisms started giving off oxygen in a process called photosynthesis. And the belief is that something changed these little bacteria. Maybe it was cosmic rays created a mutation. Not 100% sure, but photosynthesis began. The carbon dioxide was changed and free oxygen was released in copious amounts into the atmosphere. And at the same time, life became a lot more complex. So what was once single cell organisms now became multi-cell, and we were on the long evolutionary track that led to the great, great variety of life we see today.
Right. That's amazing period in life's history. I think that was the Cambrian.
Cambrian explosion it's called, yes.
They called it that because many life forms evolved at that time.
And what's interesting, Bernie,
yes,
just to
ahead,
say
Mike,
that, it
sure.
wasn't an easy, it was not an easy trip to make because also a lot of these life forms got wiped out by cosmic impacts, and sometimes it would destroy about 90% of all life and it had to start all over again. So the Earth is a pretty resilient place, and life just seems to want to be here.
Yeah, if you know, when when we talk about evolution and origin of species and all that, that's a whole nother show, which we'll do someday. But you have to realize that it's not a straight line from bacteria to humans. Life was a lot of branches, a lot of dead ends.
Absolutely.
And as Michael said, then to the time of the Cambrian, which is just one epoch of the Earth's history, 90% of the life on Earth was wiped out. And there were a few times in the Earth's history when that happened, when there was a massive impact with a big meteor that came and blocked out the sun for a few years, and that gets us up to the dinosaur time. But let's just say that it's been a very complicated evolution to the present day, and the evolution is still going on. You may not notice it, but it is still going on. And Michael just came back from the Galapagos, where he saw a good example of that with Darwin's finches. But we're going to save all that for another show. Today we're just going to talk about life, how life started and all that. Now, what about on other places, Michael? We know we have life here. We think that on Mars that there is liquid water, even though we've seen it frozen as frozen ice. And on the moon of Jupiter, Europa, we think there's an ocean. So what's the chances of life on those other planets?
You know, this is probably something that a lot of people are wondering about, and some people are convinced that life already exists. In fact, you know, as recently as 300 years ago, the belief was that life was very, very prevalent on other planets. Of course, it was not based on very scientific fundamentals, but if you would question somebody from the 17th century, they would say, of course there are beings on Uranus and Saturn and stuff. Of course, this was probably seen as the bounty of God's creation. Today, of course, we have no evidence of life elsewhere other than the Earth. As much as people want to believe that there is life in the universe, there has been not a single shred of evidence to prove it. That isn't to say that there aren't good hunches and speculations about it. We're becoming a lot more brilliant about what life needs to exist. And of course, Bernie, let me just, you know, put this little caveat on. When we talk about life, we have to talk about life as we know it.
Right.
Because who knows? Nature could have the greatest surprises for us that we have no idea.
That's true. We're saying life as we know it. With the things that we need, carbon-based cells,
water,
and some source of energy, and basically that's it. Hydrocarbons, and that's life on Earth. To put it in a test tube, I was going to say a nutshell, but I'll put it in a test
maybe
tube.
Maybe it is a nutshell.
So we're going to sign off now. My guest Michael Hamburg and myself, Bernie Wides, the naturalist, and I think we're at the end of the show. And remember, in New York City, there are plenty of places to learn about astronomy. There are amateur astronomy associations, and the Museum of Natural History is a great resource. So signing off for now, this is Bernie Wides, the naturalist, and Michael Hamburg, the astronomer.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Bernie Wides, the naturalist. We're back with the last segment of our show. I thought we were finished, but you know the way time is, sometimes it flies and sometimes it doesn't. So we have a few more minutes to round up what we were talking about. And I started to tell you about things in the city, places to go, and things like that. So I'm going to give you some information about the Museum of Natural History, since we're both affiliated with it, and we think it's a great educational resource. So if you have kids, it's certainly a great place to go. The current shows at the museum, we're coming into the Christmas season and the kids will be home on vacation, and that's a great place to take your family. It gets crowded over the holidays, but you can always go and have a good time. So the things that have to do with astronomy, which I'll talk about, are the following. And some of these things go on all year round. Like Tuesday nights in the dome. The dome refers to our beautiful planetarium that we have. We have the Hayden Planetarium Space Theater. And they have a thing about virtual universe, which is a computer-generated picture of the universe as we know it so far. Michael, have you seen any of those Tuesday night shows?
They're amazing. I mean, yeah. You actually believe you are in a spaceship and you are traveling right through the cosmos.
Right. Okay, then we have Celestial Highlights, which is once a month at the museum. There's a lecture about the night sky. So that's a very good one. That's especially a good one for kids because we use our beautiful Zeiss projector and we project the night sky of the month. So it's always the last Tuesday of the month, and it's a terrific show. And what we do is we point out the constellations that are visible that month.
And the planets.
And the planets and the positions in the sky. And if there are any special meteor showers or something. Do we have another meteor shower coming up, Mike?
Well, yeah, there's one called the Quarantrids. And the problem with meteor showers, Bernie, is you've got to get up early in the morning to
okay.
see them.
Yes.
Right, you have to get up like at 3 in the morning.
Okay.
But if you want to, actually go on those websites for SkyIntel or astronomy.com, and they will tell you exactly what to do.
Yeah, for somebody living in Brooklyn, for example, if they get up, let's say they want to observe the sky in the evening, is there a place that's dark enough that they can actually see some of the planets, maybe?
Well, actually, what's really nice about the planets is you don't have to go to a particularly dark place because the planets that we do see these evenings are bright enough to shine through all the light pollution that we create.
Okay, that's terrific. I know I live in Manhattan, and we have a pier out on the river. So I walk out on the pier, and it's pretty good considering. If the planets are not really low in the sky and lost in the gloom, you can see it. Like the other night, Jupiter was really bright, and it was near the moon. It was a great sight to see. So yeah, you have to remember the planets. The word planet means a wanderer, because the ancients thought that the planets wandered through the heavens. We know that they're on a path like the Earth, which is a prescribed path around the sun. And it does vary a little bit. It's sort of an ellipse rather than a circle. Michael, you want to comment on
well,
that?
Well, yeah. they wander quite a lot compared to the stars. Now, when the ancients right. looked at the stars, they called them the fixed stars because they couldn't see the movement. And that's because they are so achingly far away.
Okay. But the planets look like they're wandering.
Yes.
And therefore, the name planet means
yes.
wanderer.
Planet.
And the same base is when I have a project going, I'm doing a project on plankton, which are these tiny microscopic little plants and animals that are in the sea. And the word plankton comes from the word planet because they wander around. They can't swim against the tides and the currents. So there's where the name plankton came from. See, you have some good words to remember today. This is an educational show after all, right? Okay, and tonight at the museum, there's a great two great lectures going on. One is called Unmasking Europa, The Search for Life on Jupiter's Ocean Moon. And that should be a fascinating thing because we're learning more and more about Jupiter and the moons. Michael, how about that lecture tonight? What do you think?
Well, I think that when you asked before about life on other planets, I think that's probably one of the better candidates in our solar system, although I'm kind of doubtful about life in our solar system. And Europa has a warm ocean, most likely under this crust of ice. And, you know, when you have warm water, Bernie, that's a really good recipe for perhaps having some type of life.
Right. If there's going to be life somewhere else, it's probably going to be in some kind of water body, because that's the only kind of life we really know about that needs water. So that may be a good lecture to see. Also tonight, there's another one called How We Know What We Know. And that lecture is being given by an astronomer, Mike Scherer, who who works at the museum, and he's going to tell sort of a brief history of some of the latest developments in the sky. Like I spoke to Michael before about instruments that help us to see what's going on and to record what's going on, like bigger and better telescopes and the spectrometry, and especially the Hubble. Now, why is the Hubble so good? Because it's above our atmosphere. So you don't get the distortions from our atmosphere, even though the new telescopes are being made by way of computers to overcome that distortions. I remember visiting one of these new telescopes with the multiple mirrors, where they can focus all of these mirrors and get rid of the distortions from the universe.
And that's called adaptive optics.
There you go, adaptive optics. Right. That's what I pay $100 for when I go to my optician, adaptive optics. So what we have a minute or two left. We don't have much time left. So I'm going to give you the phone number again, 718-497-2128, which is if you have any questions, call it in. And if you have any questions about any of the shows that we do, please call it in. And also information for if you want to do it over the internet, it's info@heritageradionetwork.com. And our sponsor is TechServe. And just a thing about coming shows. I have a friend who is a microbiologist, and he has become really interested in evolution. So we're going to do a show on evolution and origin of the species, because this is the 150th anniversary of Darwin's publishing his papers. And we have an exhibit at the museum about him and about Wallace, who reached the same conclusions as Darwin did, but he didn't get any credit. So if you come to the museum, you can see an exhibit on Russell Wallace at our museum. So this time we're really going to sign off. Last one was not sign off time, but now we are going to sign off. And I want to thank Mike Hamburg for coming way out to Bushwick today.
My pleasure.
And joining me at this little space area. And I think we'll probably do it again, because I think we both had a good time. And we're going to sign off for real now, because I'm getting hungry and it's time for lunch. So we're going to go to Roberta's and have a lovely lunch. So signing off, it's Bernie Wides, the Naturalist.